This is how we know love. Jesus laid down his life for us, and we ought to lay down our lives for our brothers and sisters. But if a person has material possessions and sees a brother or sister in need, and that person doesn't care, how can the love of God remain in him? Little children, let's not love with words or speech, but with action and truth. This is how we will know that we belong to the truth and reassure our hearts in God's presence. Even if our hearts condemn us, God is greater than our hearts and knows all things. Dear friends, if our hearts don't condemn us, we have confidence in relationship to God. We receive whatever we ask from him because we keep his commandments and do what pleases him. This is his commandment, that we believe in the name of his son Jesus Christ, and love each other as he commanded us. The person who keeps his commandments remains in God, and God remains in him. And this is how we know that he remains in us, because of the Spirit that he has given to us.
It's a small four-letter word. L-O-V-E. We talk about love a lot, don't we? And we use it contextually in many ways. The love of significant other, the love of family, the love of dear friends who we count as family, the love of our work associates. And we love things, don't we? Nature, art, music. We love to love, don't we? It makes us happy and fulfilled. L-O-V-E, love. That's what today's scripture passage focuses on for us this morning. So because we love to love, this should be an easy day. In the first verse of our scripture, we're reminded of the love of Jesus, who as Christians we claim to follow. So we heard Daniel read, we know love by this, that he laid down his life for us. In other words, Jesus lived his life in a way that showed abundant, inclusive, and radical love in an ancient community that didn't get much love from anyone or anywhere. But Jesus loved him. Ah, how he loved him. Time after time, that love was tested. And at every crossroads on the journey, Jesus chose to love the unlovable. His was a demonstrative love. And that, my friends, is the challenge given to us with today's scripture. For let's be really honest. We do love to love when it's easy, when it's convenient, when we get something back from it. We love to love. For love sounds really good until it doesn't. I don't wish for any more natural or humanitarian disasters than we already have in our world, because God knows there's a lot of distress and destruction, plenty to go around. And yet, what do we notice occurs when unexpected tragedy happens? Let's think of some that we are all too familiar with. 9/11 and Katrina evoke memories and feelings with just the mere mention of those two names. There are school shootings in Newtown, Connecticut, and mall shootings in Aurora, Colorado. We have experienced together as a nation bombings of churches and synagogues and mosques, all in the name of God. And then closer to home, I know many of you have posted on Facebook that you've walked our beautiful Arboretum. And in doing so, if you walk there, you will eventually find the memorial for Flight 5191, which crashed less than a mile from our house in August of 2006. And just 3 short years ago, several parts of eastern Kentucky was wiped out with an uncharacteristic tornado from which people are still recovering. And this weekend's tragedy in Nepal reminds us of disaster and tragedy. We know it all too well, don't we? I don't wish for any more. And yet, do you join with me in noting something about when disaster or tragedy strikes? It seems to me that it is at those times when the love spoken about in Scripture and the love modeled by Jesus is really going on. It is at those times when we're not so concerned about whose religion is right or wrong, whose skin pigment is more beautiful, whose marriage should be valid, and whose right to belong trumps the other. Have you noticed in tragedy and disaster that people rally together and they sacrifice their time and their money and their energy and their safety for people they don't even know? People that on a normal day they might not even sit next to and certainly want any part of. And yet, when the chips are down, we rally together to love and nurture and support and sustain. Why is that? Why are we like that? These are questions that keep me up at night. Why do we live out unconditional love in disaster and tragedy in such beautiful, powerful ways, and yet put so many restrictions on who and how we love in the normal course of day-to-day life? Now, I know we have some seasoned experienced social workers in our church family, and I'll bet you've studied this. But here are some possible reasons for this odd behavior that we share as human family. When we find ourselves in the middle of tragedy, especially that which threatens our life or our safety, we don't have time to take a measurement of those sharing our predicament, do we? Brent and I, like some of you, enjoy going to the movies. And for example, when we go there, there's a diverse mix of folks in the theater. They're young and old. They're black and white and mixed. I'll bet some are right-wing conservative with their politics, and others are left-wing liberals. And should we poll the crowd, I would guess that we'd find Baptists and Catholics and megachurch folks with some Jews and Muslims weaved in the crowd. We see men with women and men with men and women with women. We see people obviously on their first date. And we see people obviously having been together a good while. Those are the easy ones to spot. Some arrived in their smart cars. Some arrive in the largest SUV available on the market. The point is, when we go to these public places, movies, ball games, concerts, theaters, discussion groups, etc., etc. There is a wide array of representation all over the board. And so we respectfully take our seats, perhaps sizing each other up. But if and when something occurs, an emergency of any kind, it seems like all the sizing up goes out the window. And we commence to taking care of one another. In the tragedy of 9/11, emergency personnel of all diversities entered those buildings to save the lives of trapped people of all diversities. When Katrina occurred, the nation responded with record monetary gifts, and across our country, New Orleans refugees were supported and given shelter and food, and in many cases, new homes and new lives. When conservative churches took up collections of food and supplies, well, they didn't specify who could get them, did they? Perhaps it was two dads raising a family or two moms raising a family. And how about the story of a Christian moviegoer losing her life because she shielded a Muslim moviegoer? When tragedies occur, such as the plane crash here in our own city, when those grieving families arrived at the Campbell House, which became for them their own reality of ground zero, they didn't care whether it was a Pentecostal grandpa, Kenny, a highly educated rabbi, Ross, or a female priest that met them at the door with outstretched arms as they held them close enough to dry their tears. When these things occur, it seems like something comes over us. Something greater than ourselves. Something greater than our differences. Something greater than our stereotypes or opinions or rules. And you know what I think? I think our story today tells us what that something is. Little children, let us love, not in word or speech, but in truth and action. And by this, we will know that we are from the truth. Whenever our hearts condemn us, God is greater than our hearts. And God knows everything. See, this love thing sounds really good until it gets hard. And let's be honest. Many, many times, it's hard. Even with all the disasters I mentioned and numerous other ones I did not, there are plenty of times when our own prejudice get trumped by the situation at hand. I think it's at those times when our raw humanity surfaces and our efforts to be one shine through. That's a good thing. And yet, what do we do in those in-between times? In between shootings and tornadoes and random acts of oppression or violence, try as we might, we just tend to dig into our own lives, clueless oftentimes about the hurts and needs around us, and admittedly not as eager to help those who we would classify as so different from us in their values, in their beliefs, in their lifestyles. God help us, we just tend to rally around ourselves, don't we? And those like us. And we tend to hunker in with our own, thinking that we just can't break bread, literally or metaphorically, with those who we don't like or don't like us. And yet in the scripture, we're reminded of the cost of discipleship. And the cost is that we love. Not in word or speech, because talk is cheap. We're called to love by our actions, because I'd like to have a quarter for every time I heard this in my home. Actions speak louder than words. We are called to metaphorically lay down our lives, to sacrifice, to do the inconvenient loving, to do the inconvenient acts which give witness to God's love through us. And sometimes, my brothers and sisters, I swear, it is so hard. Because some people are hard to love. They really are. I really am. Whenever we think we just can't, we just can't love, we just can't share, we just can't do it, God intercedes, reminding us that God is greater than our hearts, and God is bigger than our divisions. Don't you wish we could have disaster, tragedy kind of love for one another all the time? Do you join me in the weariness of the divisions? The constant badgering and back and forth judgment of one another? Attacked for how we look and who we love and what faith we follow? Attacked for how we identify ourselves in terms of orientation or gender identity? It is exhausting. What might occur if we simply just allow each other room to be who and what we are, without the labels, and just, I don't know, maybe leave it up to God to sort things out? What might it be if the millions of dollars and the millions of energy hours spent dividing us were spent feeding the poor, housing the homeless, treating the addicted, caring for the elderly and the differently abled, and educating our kids? Why does it take tragedy or disaster for us to come together? Because we rely on our own hearts far too much. Hearts that have been hurt. Hearts that have been broken. Hearts that have become hardened. Damaged hearts with such a faint beat that they can't possibly get us beyond self-preservation. Ah, but lest we remember, whenever our hearts condemn us, God is greater than our hearts. God is greater than our broken, hardened, faint-beaten hearts. And if we'll let God come into our hearts and live in us and through us, it's then that we love and act out that love in a way that's beyond ourselves. So I pray that you and I and them can learn how to practice that kind of love in the absence of disaster. How our world and our own lives would be so very different. Maybe love could indeed be as good as it sounds, without the tragedy we require to love each other as we're called to do. Maybe.